next time we will do it, we mentioned this, but we'll do it on an annual basis starting this coming September, on September 12th, Swamiji's spiritual anniversary. But this is just to kind of prime the pump. So I do have some questions that people have submitted, but if you all have questions that you'd like to ask, we can start with those.
I noticed that the 12 points became 14 points.
No, they always were 14.
Well, I had a copy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but is he, from now on, is he still working on it?
I think it's done. I think it's, yeah, it's at the printer. They're working on the cover design. Sudarshan's question, just because this is being taped, is Swami still working on the book? No, it's done. It's at it's in the design stage. Renee Glenn is doing the cover, and the cover will be just a beautiful picture of Swamiji in his robes, the blue robes, Nayaswami robes. It was taken during the filming of the Italian television crew. It's a beautiful picture. And it just says, the title has changed, if you don't know. It's A Renunciate Order for the New Age. And she's trying to match, get the right blue, and they don't make that ink. So she's really kind of struggling with it. But anyway, she thinks she has some solutions.
Speaking of blue, I had this idea to have a little blue pin that you could just wear around. If you didn't work in your robes, you just have a little blue pin that you could pin on your shirt.
Well, it's an interesting thought, yeah.
And I thought I might just throw that out in case there's any viewers in the audience.
Okay, Sudarshan was saying creating a blue pin or turquoise pin for Tyagis or gold pin for the Brahmacharis. I think we can certainly work on that. Right now, Nirmala has taken on the project of creating the robes and is... making progress. Things are always interesting in India, and you know, you promise things that never quite come out the way you expect. But anyway, they're working on that. Mayatri. Well, he was meaning by that you wouldn't leave the ashram and go and decide that you were going to be a fashion designer, you know. It wasn't that you wouldn't be serving or, you know, it's to... Of course. But it's more in, like, leaving the ashram to do something else. Lisa. Okay, Lisa's asking the question. She said in some discussions with people, they said, well, I work outside a lot with other people, and I don't know if it's appropriate for me to become a renunciate. Are they talking about in terms of relating to members of the opposite sex or just in general cutting yourself?
Being out there working with people in the world all the time and, you know, need to be really active in the world. Most of their work happens outside of the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's really all a matter of consciousness. As I think we use this phrase, and it's an excellent question, at one of the other satsangs that Anandamoyi Ma said to one of her direct disciples, Hari Priya. She said, better to live in the ashram, or better to live in the world and long for the ashram than to live in the ashram and long for the world. So it's really a matter of consciousness. You know, you could be living... surrounded by, you know, cloistered monastics and still be talking about, you know, things that pull your mind down. As Swami gave examples in when he was with Master, you know, that two of the monastics were talking. He didn't say what they were talking about, but you can use your imagination. And Master said, there's, you know, this is a place of God. You don't think, talk about such things. And so it's really a matter of how you relate to people. I think, in fact, Dr. Peter is an excellent example. He you know, he probably has to work, interact in a very, very direct, personal way with just the general cross-section of the population more than most of us do. And yet you always feel that he's relating to the people at the clinic from a point of being centered in himself to their higher self. And so that's really what it comes down to. I remember years ago we went into Earth Song. This was before, when it was in the first place by SPD, to the left of SPD. And we went in there, and Swami said, the people are doing a very nice job, but they're just being friendly. He said they should be divine friends. And that's all he said. And I really thought about it. And what he was saying was, they're being, oh, hi, how are you? You know, do you want some more tomatoes? But they weren't being centered. They weren't coming from their higher self. Not everyone, but he made that comment, to the highest self of the other people. So that's what it's really a matter of, to be centered in yourself, to not be thinking of what people can give to me, but thinking about what I can give to others, and to be relating to the highest aspect of other people. And then, you know, it shouldn't make any difference who you have to serve. I mean, you could, you know, there are saints in leper colonies, you know, Brother, what was his name, who was on the island of Molokai?
Damien,
exactly. Okay, other questions? Okay, this is one that someone wrote. I won't say his name. It's not personal, but he's sitting here. Can you help me understand the difference between the Ananda Sevaka Order and the New Renunciate Order? As a member of the Sevaka Order, we have been working towards everything Swami says in his new book. I always thought that is what we were all about, complete dedication to everything Master and Swami has taught us. Transcending the ego and utter surrender and dedication to God and Guru. Very good question. And what I thought would be helpful, we did this, Lisa organized a very beautiful retreat on Saturday morning for people who are taking life vows in the Sevaka Order on Master's birthday. And to help people understand the difference, we read the life vows for the Sevaka Order and the Tyagi vows. And it doesn't take long, and I think I'll do this, because it really, when you read the vows, it really gives you a sense of how they are different. Okay. Okay, can I get closer to the mic? First, from the Sevaka, these are the Ananda Sevaka Order life member vows. It starts with the salutation to all the gurus, then... I offer my life, my service, and my devotion unconditionally to God, to you, my line of gurus, and to the ray of the divine light that you represent. I promise to live my life always in openness and surrender to God's will. I will abide by the monastic principles of simplicity and self-control as they have been defined in the guidelines for living at Ananda. Henceforth, I relinquish all sense of I and mine in my life. I offer all that I own and all that I am at thy feet of infinity. I dedicate myself to finding thee, my God, and to serving thee in a spirit of love through my fellow man. As a means of attaining self-realization, I pledge my cooperative obedience and loyalty to Ananda, to those members who are responsible for guiding the community in its various aspects, and above all, to the living representative of the Ananda line of gurus, the spiritual director of the Ananda Sevaka Order. Guide me and strengthen me in this, my divine resolution, that I live the rest of my life for God alone. So you can see in all the references here, and many of the references, it's about community life. It's about the Ananda specifically, and whereas the New Renunciate Order is beyond the Ananda, but it's pledging obedience to the spiritual director of the monastic order here, and abiding by the guidelines in this. So, and what this is, I'm sure we've all studied this, it's community life defined. So what we're establishing in the Sevaka Order, yes, it is a monastic order, but it's in the context of a spiritual community. So as we put it, the other day, I think it was a good way to put it, it's almost like it's you and God and the Sangha of the spiritual community. So it's like a triangle. Whereas when we read now the vows of the Nyaswami's complete renunciation, it's just you and God. There isn't any reference to any entity or body or community outside yourself. Sorry, I thought I had it marked. Okay. From now on, this is the vow of complete renunciation for the Nyaswami. From now on, I embrace as the only purpose of my life the search for God. I will never take a partner, or if I am married, I will look upon my partner as belonging only to Thee, Lord. In any case, I am complete in myself, and in myself will merge all opposites of duality. I no longer exist as a separate entity, but offer my life unreservedly into Thy great ocean of awareness. I accept nothing as mine, no one as mine, no talent, no success, no achievement as my own, but everything as Thine alone. I will feel that not only the fruit of my labor, but the labor itself is only Thine. Act through me always, Lord, to accomplish Thy design. I am free in Thy joy and will rejoice forever in Thy blissful presence. Help me in my efforts to achieve perfection in this, my holy vow, for I have no goal in life but to know Thee and to service Thy channel of blessing to all mankind. So you can see the difference in approach. One is very much the brotherhood, and then in the new renunciate order, it's very much just the individual soul and God. And that's why there are people that, you know, maybe, as Swamiji envisions, maybe members of other Swami orders, other lines of discipleship that will be a part of this. And, you know, we asked Swami in Assisi, are we going to try to keep records? And he said, yes, try. but, you know, once it really, if it gets launched in India, it's we won't have records. And you can, if you remember, when we started the Sevak Order, I think Savitri well remembers the incredible task of trying to keep the records and the names and the dates, and we did that already. We don't have to do that again. Okay, I'll go on to a couple of other questions. Someone left a telephone message, and I couldn't recognize the voice, but anyway, it was a good question. Can you talk a little bit about non-attachment for those taking any of the vows, especially towards family, grown children, and spouses? Well, you know, first of all, let me say, this is all very new. I can give one answer, but on a deeper level, we're just all learning how to do this ourselves. And in a couple of years from now, I would like to be able to get up and talk about how the Nyaswami and the Tyagi vows relate to the marriage vows that we've taken. Because it's not like we're taking off our wedding rings. It's not like we're renouncing our marriages. But they are changing. They are changing in a very profound way. And not just in outward behavior patterns, but in the consciousness with which we relate to each other. And so I myself don't know. I can feel the direction it's going in, but I don't think I can articulate it yet. But as I say, it would be very helpful at some point in the future to talk about the transition. But as far as non-attachment to grown children, spouses, well, Swami says it very simply and beautifully in this part of this vow, I will never take a partner, or if I am married, I will look upon my partner as belonging only to Thee, Lord. In any case, I am complete in myself, and in myself will merge all the opposites of duality. So, you know, speaking personally, I have a grown son, I have a spouse, and, you know, many people taking the vows have grown children and spouses. But it's a matter of that the key, there are two three key phrases. One, I see them belonging only to God. And that's a very, I mean, you can go very, very deep with that. It's very freeing. And I can imagine that the more we live it and go deep with it, the more the Nyaswami and Tyagi vows will be the fulfillment of the marriage vows, because it will be a way of loving in the highest way that we are capable of. So seeing your partner belonging only to God, seeing your children belonging to God, not that you don't love them, not that you don't care about what happens to them, but they're not yours. And that's the important thing. And then another concept he gives here is, I am complete in myself. And that's like a real watershed between a kind of a traditional, normal marriage and family. And because, you know, we've all seen couples that are not complete in themselves, you know, just clinging on each other and defining their life in terms of their partner. And we're being shown a higher way to do that. And so to be complete in yourself, even if you're raising children, nevertheless, not to define yourself, oh, my little Johnny and my little Sally. And, you know, it's just like, no, this child belongs to God. This partner belongs to God. And God has given me I have drawn karmically this pattern now in my life. But nevertheless, I am complete in myself. And then further, and in myself, I will merge all the opposites of duality. So you're saying the masculine, the feminine, the impersonal, the personal, all of those things, you just are redefining them within yourself and merging them within yourself. So it's something we all have to work on as a community. It isn't black and white, and it isn't that we're cold are indifferent to our children or our spouse, but just to see them as gods, that we are complete in ourselves, even if, you know, look at Swamiji. I mean, truly, he has a family of thousands of people that all depend on him and write him and want his advice and want his love and want his energy, and yet he gives to everybody, and yet there's this sense, no relationship defines me. I am complete in myself. And so it's a direction that we move towards.
David, could you read the Tyagi vow too, and just how they're different?
So this is the Tyagi vow. I understand and fully accept that the true purpose of life for all human beings is to seek God. In pursuit of that goal, I offer my own life unreservedly to seeking my own divine source. I will retain no ego-gratifying goal in my life, but will strive always and above all to please God. I will view my partner as a channel of God's blessing, guidance, and strength, and will strive always to be a similar channel in return. I will endeavor always through the love and respect I feel for my partner to reach out in love and service to all humanity. I will try never to see anything in this world as mine. So this is, you can feel, it's directional. I will try not to see things. I will try to view my partner, but will view everything as a manifestation of God. I will look upon life as God's dream drama and also dream entertainment. I will accept as his gift whatever comes to me in life. I offer to thee, Lord, my life, my desires, my attachments, and the fruit of all my labors. Bless me and strengthen me that I become ever more perfect in this, my holy vow. So it's not different in any of the underlying attitudes, but it's just more, as I say, it's directional. It's still, and in fact, the question was raised, I believe we said this, if, let's say, a Tyagi is married and their spouse dies or something, should they think of not remarrying? And Swami said, he said, that's not black and white. Whereas with the Nyaswami, yes, if you are married and your spouse you know, passes away, then you wouldn't think of remarrying. So it's directional. Okay. Then here is a question. Oops, sorry. Okay, she kind of, I'll start in the middle because she's a little talking about other things. I can't quite get my head around the fact that the Nyaswami and Tyagi order members can be married, but the Brahmachari order members must remain single. Let me just pause there. By definition, that's just definition, Brahmachari means a single person. It means a celibate single person, whereas Tyagi and what Swami is doing so uniquely in renunciate orders is to give people who are married a chance to live a life of renunciation. So we have three steps. You know, if you, there are many steps. In fact, we mentioned at one of our larger satsangs, someone, a young woman in the community came up and said, you know, I'd like to take the Brahmacharya vows, but I know that I do want to marry and have children, so can I just do it for a while and then take a sabbatical and then come back? And we said, no, just stay a life member of the Sevaka order. That is a renunciate order. And then when you work out your karma, when that's done, then you can see about what your next steps are. So, as I say, by definition, Brahmacharya in monastic orders are those who are single and have, and that's why we have postulant Brahmacharya vows, that's conditional for 1 year. And then if you do that, Swami said you can take the conditional vows, postulant vows for up to 3 years and then take the final vows. But that's saying essentially, I'm not going to marry because that's what I feel clearly that is my path to God.
Maybe just on that too, the Brahmacharya vow is essentially identical to the Tyagi, it just isn't mentioning a partner.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good, thank you. Okay, and so she just goes on, I'm wondering why Brahmachari can't also have a, quote, partner, even though it's celibate. And it just, you know, it's, we're giving you different alternatives. So it's like saying you can either be in a relationship and be a renunciate, that's Tyagi, or you can be a single person and be celibate, and that's a Brahmacharya. And, you know, it's, those are the options. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Is postulant, there's kind of a fine line here. If you are not sure about what you're feeling, is postulant Brahmacharya an opportunity to decide what you're feeling? Or, you know, how do you decide whether or not you're supposed to be in a relationship if you're not, if you absolutely decide you're not going to be in a relationship? Does that make sense? How do you, you know, is it an opportunity to still investigate through friendships and so forth?
Not really. I think if you're still unsure, you know, somebody put it well, I think it was Nabha at one of the meetings, when he said, Swami gave us conditional Brahmacharya vows, but he said, but these should not be conditional in your heart. In your heart, they should be unconditional. So you're giving yourself a year in taking these postulant vows where you say, I'm making this commitment for 1 year that I'm not going to explore relationships. And then at the end of that year, you can reevaluate. Okay? And Nalini?
There used to be the concept of Brahmacharya as a phase or stage in life before becoming a householder.
Right. This is...
Is that?
No. This is really when you're saying, I think this would be a phase before becoming a Nyaswami. But you're really saying that... to repeat the question Alini asked, used to be, according to the four ashrams, that the Brahmacharya was a phase or a stage before a householder. It's not, in this context, it's not. It's really seen as part of a renunciate order, not as far as it is part of four ashrams of progressive. Say again, say louder. Well, they could take postulant vows. Or I know Seva was telling me with the women living together, both Nyaswamis and Brahmacharinis, they're going to invite young women in the community to live there without taking any vows, and commit to it for a year. And so that would be a nice kind of testing period for them. You know, there was also a question that came in by phone where someone asked, if someone isn't sure, should they stick with the old brahmacharya vows that Swami gave and not join the new Brahma? And I said, no, the old brahmacharya vows are getting phased out. This is what Swami has created. Yeah, there's a lot of questions that come up. Okay. Okay, I'll just finish. There were some other parts to this question. From what I have heard, I have some fears that sex will be seen as a subversion of spiritual ethics, and certainly to my mind, there are sexual behaviors that could be looked on in that way, and that being an ascetic will become an obsession and the only true way to find God. Well, you know, I'm sure there will be mistakes, and I'm sure people will get rigid and judgmental about it, and I'm sure other people will do it in a way that's expansive and inspiring for others. And so we just have to, we're all human, and we do the best we can, and we move forward with these vows as best we can. And certainly I remember a question, for example, that came up in Assisi. Someone asked Swami, what if someone is a Nyaswami and they get involved with someone? And he said, we don't want to condemn anyone, and we won't throw them out of the order, but we'll just let them make the choice what direction they want to go in their life. So, you know, I think given that kind of acceptance of people, I hope it won't be, you know, just like traditional monasteries where somebody sent me a funny video, and a man was talking about growing up in a Catholic going to school in a Catholic school, and he said, boy, I had a nun who talked about hell like she was born and raised there. And so we don't want to do that. Very good.
This is a little bit on that subject, and maybe you feel like it's been covered, but I heard two things that people were going around saying that I thought it would be good to bring up. One was that Swami said at the vow ceremony that there would be heavy penalties for anybody that made mistakes, and it stayed there. And this person was just, you know, how could that be with the way he lived? So I just wanted, you could explain that he did say that, but then he also toned it down. Maybe not toned it down, because for me it was like he was holding up the highest for us that he possibly could, and within that, he wanted us to know how strong it is to take a vow, how strong that is. But also, God never judges. You could just pick yourself up. That part of it, I think, is also really important.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think I don't have a transcript of Swami's talk. I don't remember him using the phrase heavy penalties. I mean, that sounds like a hockey game or something. He said if you break your vows internally, there is a karmic balance that has to, it's like anything. If you tell a lie, if you steal, if you cheat, they're all karmic retribution. I mean, we all know that. That's the law of karma, cause and effect. And so by taking a vow and then not living up to it, he was essentially saying, really, when you take these vows, if you go deep with them, if you really live them, it will be an extraordinary blessing. If you take them superficially and kind of live them halfway, it's better not to take them. That was essentially the point he was making. So it isn't about penalties, you know.
Yes. Your own mental citizens will not be free.
That's a very good point. What Anandi said was, it's sort of like in Master's interpretation of the Gita, if when Arjuna says, I won't fight, and Krishna says to him, if you don't fight, other people will look down on you. Well, it's not other people, it's your own self-respect. Said, you know. And so really, it's just a way, for me, every morning we framed our vows, and the first couple of sentences is, from now on, I embrace as the only purpose in my life the search for God. And that's just, okay, that's it. And so everything else falls in context of that. It's not that, you know, it's really an internal process. And it was very helpful that Anandi brought up the Gita, because we're all talking about just our own mental citizens. When we let ourselves down, we're the ones that suffer the most, and we all know that. And other people are usually the most forgiving. So, are we waiting till December 24th?
Yes.
Okay.
It feels to me in the Brahmachari that there's a different kind of energetic feeling between the Naya Swamis and the Tyagis.
Tyagis. Good.
And
Brahmacharinis.
Thank you. Uh-huh. It feels very inward, and I'm relating to living around the monks at the retreat,
uh-huh.
and how they live a life that is more sedate, more inward, more a little bit offish,
mm-hmm.
And it's in no way disruptive, but energetically it's definitely a withdrawal. Do you see that as in the tradition of monks and nuns, there was more cloistered attitudes and more standoffish?
Well, that's a good question. Suze is asking about, in relating to the monks up at the meditation retreat, they have more of a aloofness. And do we see that as how it will evolve? I don't know. If we had a really separate cloister that the women would totally not relate to others, perhaps. But even if all the women live at Ayodhya, most of them will go and work in businesses and offices and, you know, be working with married people and et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. I don't know how it will evolve. We'll just have to see over time. John?
For those of us that don't live in this community, mm-hmm. that live elsewhere, maybe in other communities mm-hmm. outside, we have a more strong foot in, many of us, in the worldly mm-hmm. stuff that goes on mm-hmm. outside. To develop an attitude of renunciation in the normal functioning that I do outside the little community where I live. And I don't see a problem
mm-hmm.
with that. It's just another way of expression, another step.
I totally agree. John was part of the Sacramento community, and he was saying for those who live in our, you know, like, for example, in Seattle, there are, I think, 4 or 5 people taking Naya Swami vows, and they work in the bookstores and in the schools and in the centers, et cetera, et cetera. And, really what Swami's trying to do with this is to create a lifestyle where people are totally focused on God, but living wherever God put them. And that's why it's really revolutionary. And yes, there may be people who are drawn to a more cloistered experience, but I think as equally as important is for people to be dynamic renunciates right where they are. Okay, other questions? Janaki Devi.
This is kind of a hard one. It has to do with hugging.
Mm-hmm. Hugging.
It's such a
thinking of not?
You know, I think it depends on the individual. And I think it would go against the grain of Anand if all of a sudden we just, you know, start pushing people away. Speaking for myself, I'm sort of enjoying not hugging people, and I'm a very expressive person. But it makes you less aware that you are a physical body. And it just, it's like you're sharing love through your eyes, through your smile, through your giving of energy, through your pronoun. And so I don't think we should make any rules about it, but I think it, just like Swami had to break the ice, you know, he put up a big wall, no one touches him, you know, and still, I mean, occasionally you'll see people who don't know come run up and give him a big hug, and he's gracious about it. He doesn't, you know, push him away, but it's something we should be mindful of. And I think we should start moving in that direction where we just relate to each other with a pronoun. I'm actually finding it lovely, and I'm not telling anybody don't hug me, but you know, anyway.
It's a little difficult at the expanding light when guests come and yeah. They haven't seen you for a while, and they're so happy to see you. And I watched someone just go like this.
Yeah.
I think there's an attitude that needs to be developed.
That's right.
Giving love through the eyes and don't
give
into
like
that.
Yeah. No, it that would be so what Savitri was saying for the tape listeners is at the Expanding Light, for example, many guests come and they're so happy to see people they know and people who they've, you know, connected with in the past that they just ordinarily hug them. And I think we just have to be natural with it and not create barriers. But, you know, I noticed the last couple of times we've done Sunday service, and I always used to hug everybody, and I just pronounced, and people just picked up on it, and it was just fine. So just let it evolve and let it be natural. Elizabeth? If you can do that, yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it. But you know, I noticed that all of a sudden people are saying, "Oh, can I hug you?" And then I'll just go like that, and then they'll just go like that, and it's just fine. Parvati. Yeah. Poverty was responding to something Sue's asked earlier about what would the vibration be of the women's monastery. And Poverty was saying, having done it earlier at Ananda, that it's about joy. It isn't about withdrawal or aloof, but it's just freedom and joy. And David? Well, in this age of highly contagious diseases, I think pronouns are really... a lot of what I don't know for I can't remember. I never shake hands with people. I just it's not maybe men do it more. Siddharshan.
I was thinking about relationships, and I think Swami said in the book, I haven't reread it, but he was talking about how relationships, particularly marriage relationships, tend to reinforce the ego. And I thought about that a little bit, and I thought, you know, if you see somebody who's looking with their eyes is saying, "I love you," what that's doing is that's, and of course I think that's great, you know. and that reinforces my concept of myself as an individual person, okay, as an ego. Whereas if I can not do that or not accept that, not in a nasty way, but but offer that up, like I think Elizabeth was saying, then I can be free. And so I just wanted to make that comment because for me that was very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Just not just in my relationship with Cybic Tree, but my relationship with any number of people. I watch myself and I see that when somebody looks at me and they obviously are very happy to see me, or they're very happy about something that I said, or they said that really made a big difference to me, I have to be very careful to offer that up rather than say, oh, thank you.
Yeah. For those of us who have been in India or traveled in India, you know, they touch your feet. And at first it's like you just want to say, please don't do that. And then you realize it's part of their culture. And just as Master did, you just thought, what I finally began experiencing was it shows the incredible humility and devotion of them and just appreciating what they're giving. So if someone's projecting love, just don't take it to yourself, but just say how much love and goodness is in that person's eyes and appreciate it with that detachment.
You're not looking at you, it's what the God that they feel on you.
That's right.
Really?
That's right. Savitri.
Maybe when you were talking a little while ago, you used the term regarding Tiagi's people living together. You might have done that inadvertently, but Tiagi's are definitely legally married.
Well, it's not that black and white. I'll give an example. I don't see them here. But, for example, Julie Morgan and Steve Novisky are not legally married. They see themselves as a spiritual couple, and they're going to become Tiagis. So I hope I don't embarrass them, but I don't think so. Devaki. Devaki was asking about the relating with our extended families. Do you mean as far as telling them what we're doing?
Yeah, relating to them, telling them, parents, aunts, uncles.
You know, I think that's a very individual choice. If you think it would be helpful for friends or family outside of the Ananda circle to know, if you think it would be inspiring to them, then I would tell them. If you think it would just add one